It's a special New Year's Day edition of the Half Court Press. I'm John Niatawa, joined by Chris Hedy. A little bit of a hiatus for the podcast, but we're back.
I think we had promised something before the new year, and then we just didn't do it at all.
Schedules got a little bit crammed and jammed. And
it was a little, but that's okay.
Holidays got in the way.
Nebraska played 3 games in like 29 days, so there wasn't a whole lot to talk
about. Creighton took a week off, too. So we're back, though, to talk about college basketball as it relates to the local teams. In particular, Creighton and Nebraska, and we're going to do that. I think we should start with Creighton, because the Jays on Monday, we're recording this on New Year's Day, as I said. Happy New Year to everyone, by the way.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
So, on New Year's Eve, Creighton went to Providence and won a game. Beat the Friars in kind of a... It was Providence's style. The way that Providence plays, a lot of times, it can be problematic for Creighton, because they've got length and physicality, and they love to slow the tempo of the game down and just really kind of try to beat you up. I think they had, oh man, now I'm pulling it off the top of my head, so this is bad, but 16 offensive rebounds in the matchup that Creighton had against Providence in the Big East tournament. I mean, it was a really sort of just muck it up, rock fight type game. And that seems to be the style that every Creighton-Providence game takes on, even if Creighton's able to win. And it felt like Monday had that similar sort of feel to it, but Creighton hit 13 threes, and the Jays previously, they'd only twice in 13 games against Providence had they shot better than 40% from three. I think they were shooting around 30% during in the history of that
stretch,
series since they joined the conference against Providence. Just never did shoot it well against this team, and the most they'd ever hit in a game was 10. And they hit 9 in the second half. It was a stretch where they hit 9 of 10, and that was really the difference. And it was interesting, too, because in the first half, I think they started, well, I think they were 4 of 14. They missed their first 3 three-pointers in the second half. So I thought they were getting good looks. They just weren't going down. But that's kind of been the story of this series, is where Creighton has not been able to hit shots. A lot of times it'll get good looks, but they just don't go down. And on Monday they did. Creighton did some other things well, too. I thought they did a decent job of taking care of the ball. And on the glass, they gave up 4 offensive rebounds in the first 4 minutes of the second half, and then 2 for the rest of the way. And that was a big difference, because if you make Providence run half-court offense and you don't give them the run-out layups and you don't give them the easy putbacks or send them to the free throw line because you're out of position because they just got an offensive board, you make them work. That's the recipe for success against this team, and Creighton did a good job of doing that. So it was a big win. It's kind of a statement win for the Jays.
It's probably their, well, again, we always come back to, like, is Clemson good? But that's probably their best win. Maybe
Yeah, Clemson, by the way, just a side note, I feel like Clemson is, at the start of the year, I think I thought they were better, or they were, I think they, I thought they were better than they were, and now I think they might be better than I think they are. You know, they don't have necessarily great wins, but they did enough. They handled Lipscomb and Radford, two mid-major programs. I mean, Lipscomb beat TCU, so they're capable. But Clemson won them, so
they haven't lost to anybody they shouldn't have lost to. They've lost to, so Clemson is 10-3. They have lost to Creighton, Nebraska, and Mississippi State, and they're about to lose to Duke by a lot, probably on the 5th.
Yeah.
But okay, so Clemson's still a good win.
NCAA
but,
tournament contender, yeah.
But it felt like the Providence win for Creighton was kind of, you know, after the Oklahoma loss especially, I think a lot of people were kind of like, oh, yikes, like, I don't know about this. But well, I feel like the Providence win is a little bit more of a boost of like, nope, they can kind of be for real, or they can at least, they're not as bad as you might have thought.
And I think, well, it's one, it's important because obviously it's the first game of conference play, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Big East and how we think it might shape out and why it's important to get road wins. But so that was big, but also I think it was just an example of this team sort of growing. I think the coaches and the players have talked a lot about this, about the Jays being able, like, learning lessons as the year goes on, but they hadn't seen the result of that. So they lose Ohio State. I guess you could make the argument that, well, after the loss against Ohio State, they went down in the Cayman Islands. You could definitely see growth. That's where they got the win over Clemson. But then they lost to Gonzaga and Nebraska and Oklahoma in like a 4-game stretch. And you know, you didn't necessarily see, I think within the weeds, there was improvement, subtle.
Yeah.
Just little things, but it didn't result in, you didn't see it in the final score or how those games played out at all. But at Providence, you did. And I think a lot of the lessons, I mean, they scheduled pretty hard and in the non-conference. And
now is when it's supposed to pay off.
Right, and I think it did at Providence. There were a couple moments in that game where the Friars were gaining some momentum and Creighton did a good job of just answering back. I think a two in particular, one was where a Providence guard, Malik White, got a steal and a run-out dunk, and the crowd was on its feet right before halftime. But then Marcus Zagorowski drove into the lane and converted a layup to quiet the crowd. And there was another way. I think Alpha Diallo was fouled on a three-pointer, hit the three-pointer, got the four-point play, put Providence in front, and Creighton responded with a three-pointer in the corner from Caleb Joseph. And the next time down, I think it was Tyshawn Alexander's three-pointer. And that was Creighton never trailed after that. That was in the second half. So I think the Jays just did a good job. They talked a lot this week about one of the things they learned in Nebraska and Oklahoma is, you know, the momentum starts to turn. And I think a lot of times the human nature sort of response to that is like, oh, I got to do something like monumental here. I got to do something big. I got to get a big time dunk or a diving steal just to turn the tide. And I think the talk was this week from the team was like, no, you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just stick to the plan and keep it simple, play hard. Do the little things, and those big things will happen. Mm-hmm. You know, if you got a good box out, it'll lead to good offense, and that was sort of the idea. I think that's what they did.
Looking at the Big East in general, we were kind of talking about this before we recorded, but I kind of, when I was just looking at Creighton's non-conference and their conference schedule and just kind of what it looks like to me, and when I look at the Big East in general, it kind of reminds me of Nebraska last year,
mm-hmm.
where maybe not the best non-conference, played some good teams, probably should have won a couple games they didn't. You know, you can even draw a direct parallel where, like, Nebraska played KU and kind of had that game but lost, and Creighton this year had Gonzaga, and they're kind of similar teams. But I guess right now Creighton's projected to go 21-10 and 12-6 in the Big East, and Nebraska's projected to go 22-9, but that 22-9 and that 21-10 are so different because of the Big East, which, I don't know, I don't want to say it's like a down year, but like, I don't know if there's any team that you can, you know, beat Villanova and then you've got this exceptional win. Like, Villanova's still good, but they're not, you know, the Villanova the past couple years. So is Creighton in trouble in terms of like the Big East might bring them down no matter how well they do, or kind of where are they at in terms of the bigger picture of making postseason play and kind of living up to expectations?
Right. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I wish I had something profound to say in this
don't
moment.
We all?
About, yeah, right. Story of my life. But it's just so hard to predict. I don't know. I wrote a column a couple days ago about the Big East as a whole. I feel like it's performed fairly admirably considering how much it lost in the non-conference. I think it's the fourth or fifth best league, depending on where you look. Probably the fifth best league behind mm-hmm. the SEC, but it's clearly not as strong at the top, but the coaches will tell you, and I think they're right in this, that the middle is pretty loaded,
mm-hmm.
and the bottom isn't terrible either. And so what it means is I think you're just going to have a lot of teams that are at the 11-7, 10-8, 9-9 range. And whether or not, I feel like the last couple of years, if you were in that range, you're fine. You're getting in the NCAA tournament, most likely. I mean, Xavier lost six in a row 2 years ago in conference play, finished with a 9-9 record and made the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Butler was 9-9 last year and made the NCAA tournament. I think that the league previously has been strong enough to sort of lift you up.
Sure.
I don't know if it's going to be the case that year. I don't know if it's going to be that case this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for Creighton, I think it becomes imperative that you, I mean, if the projections are accurate and Creighton finishes, what is that, 21-10, I think you'll probably be on the right side of the bubble, but maybe just barely, or right in the middle of the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because I think about the Big East and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I kind of go back and forth. Is it a three-bid league? Maybe they can get five in. I don't know. But you look across the country and, you know, the Pac-12's down. The A-10's not where it normally is. The American maybe is, doesn't have as many high-profile teams as it usually does. I mean, like, the Big Ten and ACC are great, but somebody, there's got to, the whole tournament's not just going to be Big Ten and ACC teams. Somebody's right. got to get in. And right. so I think there are bids available. And so my thought is that
that's a good point.
If Creighton's able to, I think you got to be 11-7 or 10-8 to have a chance. But you might find that the losses don't hurt you as much as you would think they would. And maybe the committee will commend you for finishing third or fourth in the league, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Similarly to the way it does or the way it has in the past. Now, again, I don't think that it's going to the seventh place team. If the seventh place team finishes at 9-9, I don't think it's getting in the NCAA tournament. So you got to be a little bit better than that. But I do think that, I guess bottom line is I think the league's, it's down, but it's not down to the point where you're not going to have opportunities to boost your resume.
Sure.
And if you finish third or fourth, I think you'll have enough on that team sheet, the piece of paper that the, or the, you know, this little resume that the committee members look at. They'll look at it enough, they'll see enough sort of like things they can circle and say, okay, yeah, this is an NCAA tournament team.
They, I mean, right now, 12-6 wins the league. 12-6 is tied with Villanova for first.
Yeah, in projections. Surprise, Ken Palm is predicting Creighton's going to go 12-6 and tie for first place, right?
Yeah.
That's what's happening.
Yeah.
That wasn't the case like 2 weeks ago, by the way, but
what was
I think
it?
Ken Palm had him at 10-8.
Yeah.
But it's changed. Creighton has skyrocketed up his rankings now. I think they're 30th. They were 30th.
Yeah, 30th.
30th. So
it dropped to like 45, right? 45, 50?
I think, no, I don't think it had gone that far.
Okay.
That's where they are in the NET.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in the 40s.
And that's an issue.
A little bit.
NET, they weigh pretty heavy.
Well, here's my thing on the NET, and this is something that we have to look at. We're kind of all across the board on this podcast, but that's okay because we've got a lot to cover. But the NET, like you definitely do not want to have an NET rating in the 60s or 70s.
Sure.
Because I think then you might get disqualified, assuming that you're not a top 20 team in every other metric. I feel like the committee will, if they see, oh, you know, say Creighton ends up 20th in Ken Palm and 25th in Sagarin and 26th in KPI and strength of record is 24, and then but in the NET they're 70.
Yeah,
the committee is going to be like, okay, well that's just the rankings are, it's flawed for whatever reason for Creighton. We will kind of disqualify that. Mm-hmm. I think that's it's not like the end all be all. I've seen some people say, well, NET, that's all that matters. Don't worry about anything else. No. The committee is using it as a guide, but it's still going to have all these other metrics on its little sheet to monitor. And the other thing is it's still going to use the quad system, mm-hmm. the quadrant system. To me, that's the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
The committee is going to look at not necessarily what your NET rating is. It's the NET rating of your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And who did you beat in that top group? Did you have any bad losses?
Yeah.
And just so where, how does that compare to the other team? So right now, Creighton, it went 0-4. Well, I guess you could say 1-4 against the NCAA tournament caliber teams in on its non-conference schedule. And Providence probably fits in that mix as well. I mean, they're going to be, I think at the end of the year, they'll be a top 75 NET team. So that win will be a quad one win at the end of the year that Creighton picked up at Providence. But yeah, so I like the NET matters, but it's kind of like the RPI. I feel like the committee will probably have more confidence in the NET is sort of interpreting things accurately, so at least more accurately than the RPI.
Mm-hmm.
But it never did rely on the RPI. It just used the RPI to sort of like guide the process,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's what the NET is going to do. So I don't know if 45, if you're creating, I don't know where they are now today. Those rankings, probably, I don't even know if they've updated yet, the NET. But It's I guess for me, as long as you're not an outlier, if you're not like completely down in those rankings. If you're at 45, I think you're okay.
Yeah, it really, Creighton's at 37.
37.
They were previously 47, so they've already bumped up 10.
The road win. It seems like it's hard to really kind of dig into the NIT and figure out what all it values. I think if you have, I think it values efficiency, net efficiency. That's kind of been proven by some of the analysts across the country who've sort of studied it, is that if you beat teams, they have this like margin of victory component in there, mm-hmm. but it,
and that's
it,
why doesn't, Nebraska's 10.
It doesn't appear to account for the efficiency part of it. Like, so they looked at how efficient is your offense, how efficient is your defense, and then they subtract it. You know, it's a net.
Mm-hmm.
The net efficiency that a team has, and a team like Nebraska, Texas Tech, like those guys have been beaten up on teams all year, and so they're rewarded favorably for that. But I also think road wins mean a lot too, so that's why I think Creighton jumped up. But anyway, in summation, I think Creighton will be okay if it, you know, if it handles its business in league play and performs at its potential.
Mm-hmm.
The team that went to Providence and won, that team can contend, honestly, can contend for a Big East title.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're going to see that team as the season progresses, but there's not much difference. Marquette's the favorite, but there's not much difference between the number two team and the number seven team. And how I ranked it out, I think I had Providence seventh in my little Big East power rankings going into the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much difference between Creighton and Providence, but Creighton found a way to win the game.
Sure.
And so I think the more you can do that, the better. Obviously, the better you are, the better chance you have to win it. I think KenPom gave Creighton a 13% chance of winning the league. I think that might have been the fourth highest. And so, you know, there's a long way to go, obviously, and the Jays have plenty of flaws and things to work on, and you know, they're gonna go to Butler and it could, Butler's gonna be in need of a win pretty badly on Saturday, and so the narrative and sort of the perception of this team could change dramatically after that game. But I do think that what we saw on Monday is a nice blueprint for Creighton to sort of look back to and try to replicate, because if they play like that throughout the course of the season, the 18-game league schedule, they'll be in good shape in March.
Butler's played Florida twice.
Yeah. They played them in some tournament out there, Battle for Atlantis, I think. They were on opposite sides of the bracket, and then they met up sort of randomly.
It's funny because that's their best win, and then they just got crushed by them. So it basically takes away their best win immediately.
Yeah. And then they have man, it would have been very helpful for Butler to beat Indiana, but it wasn't able to do that. But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of teams in the Big East that are of that, have sort of resumes that look like Butler and Creighton, Providence, like all these teams that are just sort of middle of the pack, that have NCAA tournament potential, but it'll probably just kind of depends on who you beat and when you beat them and how you where you beat them, and if you're able to sort of keep your head above water, I guess, and know that you could have a 3-game losing streak in the middle of the season, can you recover from that quickly, and make sure that you finish above 500 in league? I think that's probably the key. It's just get to 10-8,
right?
And I think you'll be in the NCAA tournament if that occurs.
Yeah, I've.
I guess what it's interesting because you brought up Nebraska and sort of compared it. Nebraska from last year to Creighton to this year, and there are some similarities, but the one thing about the Big East is you do play everybody twice,
right,
at home and on the road, whereas in the Big Ten, Nebraska just had it was unfortunate for the Huskers that they didn't get any of those good teams at home.
That's true.
Except for Michigan.
Yeah.
And so the schedule just, they caught a bad break with that schedule, and so they ended up playing like the middle tier and bottom tier Big Ten teams. And they just missed their opportunities on the road against the top tier teams. Whereas Creighton's going to get to play everybody. They'll get two games against Marquette. You know, Marquette's a top 25 team. And so if you take advantage of that, you know, you'll find a way into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. No, that's fair. That makes sense. And again, yeah, just win a couple road games. And that obviously helps. Like, that helps everything.
Yep.
So if you can win away from home, because Creighton plays usually pretty well at home, who knows? I mean, conference play in general is just kind of a wash.
And, yeah, and I can honestly see this league, because it is so, it seems like everything's so compacted that things are going to change on a dime. Mm-hmm. Like next week, we'll have a different view of what we thought the league was going to be a week ago. I mean, mm-hmm. just you watch how the games played out at Seton Hall. I think led for 6 total seconds or something like that against St. John's, and yet still won.
Really?
Xavier was down late at DePaul and put together a rally to come back. Creighton did something it doesn't normally do at Providence and hit 9 threes in the second half to beat that the Friars. So I just think it's going to be kind of a wild sort of, I think you're going to see a lot of teams just sort of swing wildly, and I think results are going to be all over the map. It's going to be tough to sort of pin down unless one team sort of finds itself, and maybe Creighton, because of what it learned about itself in the non-conference and now it's going into league with confidence and just got a big win. Maybe Creighton's close to figuring itself out. We'll see. Yeah. Nebraska seems that it's figured itself out
for the most part. Yeah, I think. I don't know. Who knows? They could go and lose to Maryland. Actually, that wouldn't be that bad of a loss.
No.
To lose to Maryland.
I mean, I got to think that Maryland needs that one bad.
Yeah, I think they do. Maryland's weird because they're good, but they're just super young.
Yeah, they are really young.
They're like the third youngest team in the country. Mm. So you just never know what you're going to get with young guys. And I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting year for Nebraska and the Big Ten for like a million reasons. And a lot of that has to do with this team at this moment in time and the, I don't want to use the word desperation, but the desperation from the fan base to go to the NCAA tournament and win when they get there. And it's interesting that Nebraska is so good, but the Big Ten is so much better than it was last year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird because the conference was so randomly weird and bad a year ago, and all of a sudden it's one of the best conferences in the country, arguably the best if you devalue a couple of Big 12 teams. But Nebraska basically finds itself looking at a very, very hard beginning and a very, very hard ending to the Big Ten season. And I think however they play in the beginning and the end, that's going to determine their seed. If they make the tournament, if Tim Miles is around next year, like it's going to, these next couple games and then the end of the Big Ten slate are really important. And that begins with Maryland, but then you've got, I mean, Iowa, Penn State, Indiana, Michigan State. Like, you cannot mess around with any of those.
But doesn't it feel like, I mean, it's college basketball, so anything can happen. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma almost missed the tournament last year. Arizona State almost mm-hmm. did a year last year as well. But to me, it feels like Nebraska's a tournament team. I mean, they're
going to get
in. I don't even know if we need to have those conversations anymore about, like, if they're in.
They're going to have the benefit of the doubt this year,
yeah.
For sure. They're not in if they...
Like, I guess if they go
and lose to Rutgers, they lose to Illinois.
But I don't think they're going to do that. You
no,
know, based on
no,
what we've
sure,
seen, they've
yeah.
handled. I mean, the way they played against Creighton and mm-hmm. Oklahoma State and Seton Hall. I mean, I feel like, yeah, you're going to have a bad night here or there, and you would hope that you don't have that your bad night at Rutgers. If you do have it, then you can still find a way to win because you're better. But I don't know. It just feels like Nebraska's in, and I get the long-standing sort
the
of
thing.
Yeah,
so like
the tradition of the program doesn't really allow for fans to
you're not
be
wrong.
Confident.
You're not wrong at all. But the thing is whenever you, it's just so interesting.
You can't assume anything.
Yeah, if you
it's
say,
almost like you're always looking for the
yeah,
what's the next
in,
shoe.
If you say like, yeah, you know, they're in, they're gonna be a 6 seed. They're gonna be like, well, we'll just see how they do. Like, well, let's just wait and see. Well, I don't know. Like, you can't. And so I agree with you completely. I mean, they're in. They just have to not play themselves out, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the thing is that 12-8 is what Nebraska's projected to go in this conference, which would be 6th, which would be fine. They'd be safely in the tournament, kind of like we've said. And it'd just be interesting of what the optics are of the reality and what the perception is. Like, if I told you Nebraska is going to finish sixth in the conference, I think that you would probably say, well, that's probably a little bit better than they usually would do, I guess. So, yeah, I guess that's okay. When in reality, finishing sixth would be great. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would be tied with Ohio State and Indiana, which they're both, you know, powerhouses. They're both extremely good. And they'd be in the tournament, probably a five seed, five or six seed. But what does that look like, you know, with Bill Moose, who I don't, you know, want to talk about a ton, but when you go into Big Ten play and the athletic director has said, I'm going to pay attention to the Big Ten and how we play in the league, and he has expectations of, you know, 22 wins like last year and 13 wins in the Big Ten like last year, and those two things are extraordinarily more difficult now than last year, then I'm curious what the perception then is.
I just don't know if he's communicated it clearly enough, because he has to understand and realize that the Big Ten is much better than a year ago, and getting 13 wins in league is a lot harder to this year than it was a year last year. And even if you only get 10, you're still in a much better spot.
Absolutely.
You gotta make the tournament.
To be super candid,
I'm sure he knows. I wonder if he's just trying to be hesitant on.
I don't know how he
cautious with the with how he sets the expectations for the team.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be candid, like I've not talked to him yet, but I don't know if he's been to a game. I haven't been able to figure that out.
Yeah.
And when he was on the radio show doing his radio spot, it was clear to me that he knew and was way more interested in signing day and football and all of those things. And like, this isn't to like rag on him. I mean, he's his athletic director. He's got a lot of things going on. But what it said to me was he's really going to pay attention to the Big Ten. Like really going to pay attention, because I don't know if he really has been full on. And again, I haven't talked to him, so this, I could be wrong, but it has been apparent to me that the Big Ten is going to be really important to him and what he does at the end of the year. Because again, Tim Miles only has a 1-year extension, and it was very clear of like, okay, go do that again, and maybe you'll get
right.
So
how much of that do you think has really impacted this team? I mean, there's definitely you really not at all,
because
there's definitely this sort of outside. I don't even know how to characterize it, because it's the idea that this is the team and it better perform or else we're blowing this whole thing up. It's sort of idea.
Yeah.
And it's not just coming from the athletic director. I mean, it's the fan base and just sort of the perception of this group. It's like, well, if you can't do it with this guy, with
then
these guys,
then
you'll never do it in this program. Like, maybe it's just all for naught.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know. That's a weird sort of feeling, do you think they picked up on it?
You would be surprised how little the basketball team thinks about that stuff, and it was surprising to me, just because they're just so into playing the game that I don't think they worry about anything else. They're worried about like, what color are my shoes going to be, and like, did you see Steph Curry last night?
Right.
And let's talk about Damian Lillard for a little bit.
Yeah,
like they're way more interested in that stuff than like, well, I wonder what's going to happen to our coach, you know? And I think you'd be surprised.
It's not even, it's even less about the coach. It's more about, it's about the coach, yes, but it's also about sort of what this program is and whether or not, like, you know, their fans go to support them. They had like 16,000 for the Fullerton game. Mm-hmm. It was insane.
Yeah.
But, like, I would imagine that many of those fans are not fully ready to just say, like, oh, we believe in this group. We're still, like, kind of hesitant.
Yeah.
And they got to prove it to us first, which it's not on the players. It's not their fault that the program's had, sort of
a lack of success.
over the course of its history. But that just sort of weighs, it just sort of sits there. But you, like you said, the players have done it. They don't care about it. They just play. That's good.
The what I've gotten from them is they want it as much or more than the fans do. Like they want to win, not because it's like,
they've never done
it. It's just so weird, because you have to think about it. Like, James Palmer and Isaac Copeland they haven't been here for 4 years.
Yeah.
They didn't grow. They haven't been around for, and like Thomas Allen hasn't been here that long. And Nanai Kenton hasn't been here that long. So the only like program guy is like Glenn Watson.
Mm-hmm.
And probably Isaiah Roby too. But like what we get, and I don't mean that in a way where they're not playing for their school or anything, but like when the football team plays, they have the pressure and the weight of the entire state on them. Like they are a representation of the pride and the ego and everything of the actual state of Nebraska and fans. The basketball team doesn't. And part of that has to do with it's less of a, you know, it's not as big of a deal. But also I think part of it with this team in particular is like James Palmer didn't grow up knowing Nebraska basketball. And neither did Isaac Copeland. They knew Miami or they knew Georgetown where they went. I mean, that's why they went there.
Yeah.
And so this isn't, I don't think that they go out there and they think we have to be the team that does it because we need to be remembered and we need to do like we need to do all these things. I think they just look at each other and they're like, we're really good. Like we're a really good team. We should go like, yeah. I think we can go win this. This will be
honestly,
really fun.
What you're saying, like I just keep thinking about the Creighton game mm-hmm. because I just think about how much sort of, you know, you could just feel the desire from the fans,
sure.
like how badly they wanted to win that game. But the players, they definitely wanted to win, but they didn't display that, like, for lack of a better term, the desperation. Like, yeah, they played that way, but they also just played well because they knew they were, like you were saying, like right. they knew they were good.
Right.
They didn't come out there.
It's not that they don't play for the fans, but they're playing for a lot more than just like
it's interesting. Well, yeah, it's like they've done a good job of, and like you said, it may just be kind of natural with the way that they're made up mentally, but they've done a good job of just not really buying into the or letting the narrative sort of dictate how they prepare or how they play.
Yeah.
Which I feel like in the past, Nebraska teams haven't done it. Like they've
the 14-15 team, you could tell weight on them for sure.
Mm-hmm. And with this group for so far, again, we're not even to the halfway point of the year, but I think of that Creighton game a lot because it's the way they played, it didn't come off as a team that was like. It was like carrying this large burden
mm-hmm.
that I feel like the fans were those who fall, and they're right for doing that, by the way, because like they care about this team and they don't want they want to lose to Creighton, and they don't want this team to fall short of expectations, and they want to make the NCAA tournament and win a game, and they've mm-hmm. been following it for their entire lives and they're buying in, so they're rightfully skeptical that sort of hesitancy that I feel like I pick up on at times has not seeped into the locker room at all. And to me, that's notable.
Yeah, I think that Twitter is a great and a horrible place. And here's the only reason why I'll bring it up is like if Nebraska is not playing super well, and Nebraska fans and fans of any sport really, or any team, will go crazy. Like if they've not played well in 30 minutes and they're just like barely hanging on and whatever, it's just pandemonium. It's like fire everybody. Yeah, this team isn't ready. This is stupid.
But
blah, 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 stuff.
And a lot of that's, and, I was going to say a lot of that's probably born from the previous failures.
Sure. Right.
They've seen this play out. They've seen this play before.
And so that happens on Twitter. That does not happen with the team.
Yeah.
Like, it is not a when things go wrong. It's like, I think that in another way to phrase it is during Bo Pelini's years as head coach, right? They go to Wisconsin and Melvin Gordon runs for like a million yards.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing that in that game, the players weren't saying, here we go again.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could even see that last year with the Riley teams like, really, we're going to lose to Northern Illinois? This is going to happen again? And you're thinking about all the games that have happened in the past. That doesn't happen with this team.
That's a really good way to characterize it. Because I think that's what I've been trying to hover over a little bit there.
They don't have a, oh, here we go again. Yeah. We're going to miss out on the tournament. Like, we're gonna go 13-19, like, whatever. And, like, I think that you can get that from Miles maybe a little bit. but like he's a head coach, so he gets over things. Like I don't think he thinks, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
And so I think the team in general, it is never a, oh, ugh, man, this sucks. I think it's like they're just moving forward.
Right. Well, we'll find out this week a little bit more about them because they're going to play at Maryland mm-hmm. and at Iowa. And I actually think Nebraska's better than both of those teams.
Yeah,
but
I'd
it's
agree.
Playing on the road,
yeah.
and you never and both of those teams, I feel like, let's see, Maryland's lost to Seton Hall and lost to Purdue and lost to Virginia. So I think Maryland's in need of a sort of marquee win to boost its NCAA tournament resume.
Yeah, their best win is Penn State right now.
Yeah,
so they
right.
need this.
They
game.
need it, and then Iowa has lost or they Iowa beat. Oregon and it beat UConn and beat Pitt, but those wins, like at the time, they looked decent. But now, the Oregon win will probably still hold up, but the others no.
Iowa State is a good one.
Iowa State, that's
yeah.
at home.
But
although
still,
Iowa State had a couple players injured in that
yeah.
game, but like, yeah, they lost at home to Wisconsin and got stomped by Michigan State. Like, Iowa needs this game.
They do too. I mean, especially and it's.
But I think, yeah, we might be saying that a lot, by the way, in the Big Ten, just because there
everyone
are...
Everyone needs it.
There's about 10 teams that have a chance to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Maybe even 11, because, like, Northwestern has been decent.
Yeah,
decent?
I like Chris Collins a lot, mostly because he was nice to me at Big Ten Media Day and answered my questions when other coaches weren't super nice. But
realistically, I think the league could probably only get 9.
Yeah.
It seems... But too far-fetched to get more than that. But
Northwestern's a perfect example of this year, though, is because they were okay last year, but not good. But I could see this team for no reason at all, none at all, like beating Michigan and Michigan State.
Well, they almost beat Michigan.
Like,
oh, are you talking about Northwestern? Yeah,
yeah.
They almost beat Michigan.
Yeah,
there. Yeah. They.
That's what I mean. Of just like they went to overtime at Oklahoma. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
That's what I'm saying. Like they're capable and but they haven't been able to get over the hump. But anyway, so, With 9 spots available and 10 or 11 teams contending for those NCAA tournament mm-hmm. spots, you're going to see a lot of nights like Nebraska when it goes to Maryland,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's pressure on the coach and the players to perform and get that win because they know how important it'll be. So that it'll be interesting to see how Nebraska responds to that.
Yeah, I agree.
But so far, I just like the makeup of this group, man. The way they've handled themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's a great.
A couple things that stood out about non-conference was like they didn't have. I mean, their dud game was Texas Tech, and maybe the second half against Minnesota, but they didn't have that sort of face palm on your head
mm-hmm.
moment against like an Incarnate Word,
mm-hmm.
which I think shows something about kind of what we've been talking about where this team is. And then the way it handled Creighton and the way it responded against Oklahoma State. Like there's examples that this team is different than the previous Nebraska teams that we've seen.
Yeah. They
and
take,
maybe
they take care of their business
and maybe it won't show up in the final record against in the league because the Big Ten is pretty deep. But it could show up in March, assuming that Nebraska gets to the NCAA tournament. Like you never know what's going to happen. I just like we've been talking about the psyche, the makeup of this team seems to be in a good spot.
I think for perception reasons, not for internal stuff, but for perception reasons, they need a win over a ranked team. Because Dirk kind of mentioned it on Twitter, like people going, Miles was talking about how if our name on a jersey didn't say Nebraska, it doesn't like Iowa State, we'd be like top 10 team.
Mm.
And so I think that there are still like 20 some AP voters who haven't put Nebraska in the top 25. Andy Katz dropped Nebraska out of the Power 36 for reasons that are still confusing to me.
Just be careful with Andy. I like Andy a lot. I think he's really good, but his power rankings, I think, are. I think they're designed to almost sort of be very reactive.
Yeah,
if you watch them from week to week, they go kind of all over the place. I think that's just his sort of style. It's just kind of like.
But what that does is it feeds into the larger narrative of like no one respects Nebraska.
Right. Yeah.
So what they need is a ranked team win, and I think that they can get that.
Iowa still ranked, right?
Iowa. Yep.
Iowa still
25.
Yeah,
don't 24
look like a ranked team right now, Iowa. But that's okay.
No,
it'll still help.
I look at Iowa and I think they're a worse Creighton.
They, I mean, honestly, the metrics, they kind of like are pretty even,
that's
right?
That's what I mean, yeah. Like, they're just a little bit worse Creighton.
Yeah. But it's on the road, so that's...
That's true, but it's on the road and you know, things happen.
Okay, before we leave, though, Roby.
Yeah.
What do we know about the injury?
Weird. He didn't play. It's a groin injury. But I was told day of the game that if it was against a Big Ten team, he would play. Mm-hmm. And then Miles comes to the podium after the game and is like, I'm really concerned about it. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, is this going to be something that lingers for weeks and he's out? Or is he going to play against Maryland? Miles said that he practiced on Tuesday. Or maybe Monday.
Monday.
Yeah,
yeah, Monday. This is Tuesday.
Yeah. He practiced on Monday. I expect him to play. I don't know how much he'll play, yeah. But I expect him to play. I bet you they have him kind of on like a pitch count, quote unquote, right. Where he plays like 19 minutes. But they need him in a game like this.
Oh my gosh. Well, Maryland's size is
that's what I mean.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They got two big dudes. But from a long-term perspective, it's, you know, a groin kind of, it's like a groin, a hammy.
Groins are.
You know, those are the things that just.
They totally linger.
Tend to linger throughout the whole, mm-hmm. And you have to find a way to manage it.
And he's been dealing with stuff.
He had the foot.
He had the foot.
Do you wonder, is it.
Plantar fasciitis.
Like, I don't know enough about medicine to know, but like, it kind of feels like the foot and then the groin, it's like, it can be related sometimes.
Yeah,
just
if you overcompensate. Yeah.
But anyway, it is a concern, like Tim Miles said, and I guess as a caveat to everything that we've said about this team being different and that I like where they're headed.
They're in the tournament.
If they lose Roby.
Yeah. Yeah,
that would be a blow.
And they don't have Amir Harris back yet, and I don't expect him to be back for a while because mono messes you up.
Yeah.
Tanner Borchardt plays really well when he plays in for Roby. He's the best runner on the team.
Right, but
you lose.
15 to 20 minutes of Tanner is good for him, but
you don't want 30 minutes of Tanner.
Yeah. Especially when you can have 30 minutes from Roby.
Right. Right. So. Silver lining. Okay, if you're looking for silver lining with Roby, he's going to get in foul trouble, and that's going to happen in the Big Ten, and you're going to need Tanner if you want to be good, which is weird because, like, generally, in my opinion, I don't think bigs are super important in March. I think it's all guards. And so Tanner's obviously not a guard. But I think Roby isn't consistent. And sometimes he'll go out and he'll give you 20 and 10. And sometimes he'll go 11 minutes in a game and not have a point or a rebound. Mm-hmm. Tanner is going to get you a rebound. Like, he's going to hustle. And he's going to. So, like, you almost kind of just work him out. Like, okay, Roby's going to eventually be healthy and these minutes are going to be his, but like, we're going to end up needing you against Michigan State in the semifinals of the Big Ten tournament or whatever. Yeah. So like, we need you to improve right now. So, I mean, there's a silver lining. At the same time, though, Isaiah Roby is a kind of a unicorn. And he can ruin people's lives with dunks and stuff. And Tanner can't really do
right.
that. So it's a concern, yes, but James Palmer is not injured.
True.
So they're still probably okay.
Palmer looks like definitely a first team All Big Ten player.
Man, he's borderline got, All Big Ten player of the year, don't you think?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was going to ask you, who else is in contention for that award?
Well, yeah, it's like him, Carson Edwards, and Ethan Happ.
Oh, Carson. Ethan Happ probably.
Ethan Happ's having an incredible
year. Yeah, he's doing
year.
Very well. But it might depend on like who finishes higher in the standings.
Sure, yeah.
If Nebraska's able to finish a notch higher than Wisconsin or Purdue, then
if he like makes a game winner, he has a couple moments against teams.
He's playing a player of the year caliber
right now.
And that's
he is playing exceptionally well. Like statistically, it's kind of insane. Like in the last 7 games, he's shooting like 89% from the free throw line, getting there way more consistently.
Yeah, he's shooting, top 20 in the country or top 25 in the country in free throw attempts or something. Like, he's getting to the line a lot.
He's shooting in the last like 4 games, he's shooting like 75% from 3.
Wow.
Like, he's just kind of on a roll. And I think he scored in like 40. I think it's 44 of Nebraska, of his total like 47 games as a Husker. He scored in double digits. So that's what I mean. More like with the way he's playing right now and how consistent he generally is. That helps Nebraska so much because yeah. then, you know, I think I've said it earlier that the better that Thomas Allen plays, the more it kind of takes pressure off everybody. So with Roby being out, it puts a little bit more pressure on Thomas Allen and all them. So I'm curious how that plays out in Maryland. But regardless, James Palmer's going back to his hometown of D.C., and I expect him to play really well.
Well, in the pod, like we always do, Nebraska and Creighton, if they played today,
yeah,
who would you take?
I'd probably take Nebraska.
Me too.
Though maybe by just a little less. A
little less than 19?
Yeah. Maybe like 17.
I'd say they might be able to keep it under 10.
Mitch Ballack makes like one jumper. He didn't make any. All of his threes against, or all of his points were threes against Nebraska, weren't they?
Yes.
I think he was seven for 10 from the field and 7-10 for 3-point line.
Yeah.
Man, that's the dream.
Right. And then there was a game a couple weeks ago where he didn't take a shot.
really?
Or not a couple weeks ago. On Thursday, UMKC, he didn't take a shot.
Oh, that's an issue.
But that's fine.
I mean,
fine.
They won by a lot, but.
Yeah, yeah.
Take one.
He's an interesting player in that, you know, he's really not going to try to force it if it's not there. And because he does so much creating for others, you can live with that. Because
sure.
He didn't take a shot, but his assist created 13 points for others. So.
So who do you take?
Yeah, I got Nebraska one. Yeah.
But by a little less?
A little less.
Okay, 17?
Yeah. Maybe 11.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, Chris. Fun pod. We'll be back, I would imagine, next week to break down the start of or the resumption of Big Ten play and Creighton's attempt to build off the momentum and get into Providence. So
cool.
Thanks for listening.